What are people up to in town? Find out on Out There Wednesday afternoons from 4 to 5 on Valley Free Radio for live encounters from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care if we're a little bit late. Gonna make a scene, baby, me and you. On my rocking bicycle that's built for two. And thanks for tuning in to Out There today. It's Wednesday, August 14th. And I have a live guest in the studio today, my friend Jose Mediavilla has come in. Thanks for coming in, Jose.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, talk a little bit closer to the mic. We didn't quite get time to do mic check.
Oh, right on.
Here. Well, we did get time, but I didn't take advantage of it. But here we are. Here, you can move the mic closer to you.
Okay.
Whatever's comfortable. So, yeah, Jose and I are going to talk a bit about different things that Jose's involved with in East Hampton, particularly like a lot of environmental related things. I've been on the last few weeks giving a little update of my legal situation with the bicycles and the Trinidad Bicycle Osmosis Project and my rendezvous with UMass police. As you can hear, I'm here in the studio. I'm not in jail, so that's always good. I have another court date coming up in September for violating my trespass order, which I deserve no sympathy for. Anyway, I also want to say, yesterday I went to Mount Holyoke College, and I got a ride in the back of a police cruiser, and I wasn't even in zip ties. I talked with a police officer there who was super nice and had some bikes, abandoned bikes from Mount Holyoke students that he contributed to the project, like five or six of them that he gave me yesterday, which was really nice. Anyway, yes, I am still collecting bicycles for the Trinidad Project. I'll probably be collecting bikes till they get shipped, which I originally was going to ship in the fall, but I'm not going to ship until the spring or as soon after the winter as it's possible, because I got some more groundwork, foundation work to do in Trinidad, and I just need to develop some more partnerships there, as well as probably with Bikes Not Bombs here in Boston. Anyway, what else do I have? Any more stories for today? Well, since we've got a live guest here, all right, Jose. So, sometimes I like to start by asking people, "Oh, how did you get to the studio today?" So you can, take that away however you want.
Oh, I guess our walk over here.
So you came from East Hampton?
Came from East Hampton. Yeah, this morning I picked up a new sign, because most people are used to seeing me with my cardboard signs that I write words on, but I felt that with this issue was very important for people to actually look at the evidence with photographs. So I have pictures of different animals that are either consuming plastics or are suffering, like their heads trapped in plastic, and also baby birds being fed plastic by their own parents that unknowingly don't know it's plastic and are just feeding it to them. So a lot of these issues, sometimes when I just spoke to people about it, or if I just told them about it, they really disregarded it. But I think that it's more powerful to just show people that aren't looking at these things to sort of help them bear witness to it, to hopefully give them some urgency to respond to that appropriately and stop littering, because I pick up trash in East Hampton every day. And sometimes I get really frustrated because I try really hard to clean every little piece of cigarette butt and thing that I see, and then the next day it could be worse, or there's a constant flow of trash. So there's a lot of people that have the habit of just littering, and they're not thinking about the consequences of what they're doing. So I've been holding that sign all the way to to the studio today, cause, uh-huh. The town, they call me the sign guy. That's the nickname that they gave me, because it's sort of a something, a calling that I feel obligated to do. I first started holding signs at Occupy Wall Street, and that was the first time that I was around a lot of people that cared and were really aware and were trying to spread messages. And I missed them all. I'm sort of on my own here, doing my own thing, but the same effect that Occupy Wall Street has been effective in East Hampton, because they made an article in the Gazette, they made an article in the Advocate, and so the word is getting out, and I feel like I'm getting a lot of positive feedback from a lot of people as well. Like there's negative feedback from people, and there's still the people that, like, to this day, even with signs that address very serious issues such as child sex trafficking, is one of my signs that I even address, and people will still flick me off.
Really?
They'll still curse at me. I'm amazed of the differences in opinions that are out there.
Wow.
It's like both sides of the scales are represented in the public.
Walking over here today from my house led to a nice conversation at the Florence Farmers Market that we just stopped by with Maureen from Intervale Farm, and she was saying she saw the sign and was saying how up until about 8 or 10 years ago on their farm they used black plastic for mulch and stuff for the peppers and tomatoes and things like that. And then at the end of the farm season, you have to rip that stuff up, the dirty, rotten tomato, raw root entrenched mess, and it goes to the landfill. But she said around 8 or 10 years ago, they were trying to figure out another solution. And so they found a company in Canada that makes a corn-based ground cover. I don't know if that's quite the right word. A fabric or cover, mulch cover for farming.
Yeah.
And so now they've been using that. I asked her about the cost, and she said it's cost about twice as much, but on the end, at the end of the season, you save so much on labor and disposal costs, because then you can just harrow it in at the end of the season. So, yeah.
Yeah, I've been promoting permaculture, they do a lot of things like planting plants that create mulch, and then chop and drop methods where you have plants that are for mulch, like that get nitrogen out of the atmosphere, put it into the plant, also putting it into the roots. But you can chop the plants, and they also, some of these plants that you do just for chop and drop, you could extend their lives, and they like being chopped. And and some of them make good fuel sources as well. And so I think permaculture has a lot of solutions about how to, like, do things that are multifunctional and ecologically functional in the ecosystem. Mulch is a cover that can help prevent weeds, and a lot of people want, and a lot of times you can get it from free, from local tree trimmers. That's usually their go-to. And even just cardboard, laying down cardboard and poking holes in cardboard would work. Like, people don't really need the plastic sheeting. Like, there's alternatives that are more, like, ecologically sane to use.
It was cool just coming into the studio right now. Mary Whelan was on her way out. She does the show Mary Rewired from 3 to 4 on Wednesdays right before me, and she saw the sign and the topic, and she said, well, when I was growing up, plastic didn't exist. So much changes that happen in a couple of generations of what's normal and what we expect and how we know how to do things. It's like unbelievable how dependent we are.
We're so surrounded by plastic, and like, a lot of people have grown up with it around all the time. And so, like, I think that, like, it is a calling for us to sacrifice and to utilize, like, this technology that we have that lets us be our phones and our computers, that gives us this global perspective of what's going on in the world. with that's caused by the lifestyles that we live, and it's causing serious harm. And like, I feel like I'm a part of a voiceless. I'm giving a voice to a voiceless entity, the earth, the animals, the that are suffering from the pollution, and people are suffering as well. Like with climate change happening, it seems like really that is the number one issue. So like with plastic, it's very visual. You can see the problem very easily. You can see that there's this huge pool of plastic in the Pacific that's twice the size of Texas, and it's a major problem. The dead whales, we can see all that. But with climate change, it's hard to see. It's hard to feel all around the world. There's certain climates, like here in New England, where we're still very comfortable. We're still very nice. But then other continents are suffering worse. The West Coast is suffering worse. And it's sort of like this thing that I heard on the radio before we got on was this idea of being selfless. Like that's such a powerful message. Like we all need to be a little more selfless and more aware of our impact around the world, and to start making necessary sacrifices, because the alternatives exist to all the different, there's plastic alternatives. There's pesticide alternatives. There's fertilizing alternatives that are natural, that are, you know, ecologically sane. And permaculture is like sort of a neat package that educates people on those methods that they could incorporate into their lifestyles, but most importantly in our food production, and you know how important it is to get our stuff local. And
that idea of how beautiful it still is in New England, and how disconnected we can be from climate change. It makes me think of a couple weeks ago, I went down to the Connecticut River to swim, and it was like the river was gone. Like down where the bike path or the rail trail bridge crosses, and where the Coolidge Bridge crosses, usually that's where I'll swim, but it was just like a sandbar, and it felt like the apocalypse. It kind of hit me on an emotional level. Yeah, this is what's coming. I think in that particular case, they had done something with the dams, upstream or downstream. The human beings were controlling the water flow very, like, instantly, directly.
Uh-huh.
But just that feeling of like, oh, this is what a lot of the rest of the world is dealing with, this kind of drought, and there's nowhere to swim anymore.
Yeah, right. I was listening to a podcast about places in California experiencing drought, and you know what people are doing to try to save water. And it's these types of scenarios can only get more often and spread throughout the world if we continue. Like it could get very discouraging. I could understand why people would just want to be ignorant, and some people even say that they just want to give up and we're doomed and there's nothing we can do, might as well enjoy life. But I feel they're neglecting that there's this real serious opportunity, that this 12 years that scientists are telling us that we can change the world, we can you know, mitigate the impact and make things better. And I refuse to lose hope, and I think that if I lost hope, then I just can't imagine it. Like not fighting, I feel like such reward from doing what I'm doing. Like, yeah, there's people that curse me out every day that I'm out in the streets with my sign, but there's also people that thank me. There's people that like understand that and they share feedback, and they say, you know, because of you, I remembered to use my reusable bag, you know, or, you know, I picked up trash today. And like knowing that what I'm doing is motivating others to do their small part is greatly inspiring to me. And I feel like if a lot more people did those little things, it would make such a huge difference. I hear the calling from scientists that they want us to plant over 1 trillion trees around the world They and there's countries that are, you know, they're planting millions of trees in a day.
Like what happened in Ethiopia recently.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so it's like humanity is capable of solving this issue. We need to get past the denial part. America is still deeply in denial, and our president isn't helping at all. And but we have to have courage to face the truth. Like something I said in a speech to East Hampton was that the truth doesn't set us free. It beckons us to change. Nice. and to be better.
I like that. If you just tuned in, you're listening to you're listening to Jose Mediavilla here in the studio with me, Ruthie Woodring, at Valley Free Radio. This is Out There. We're on every Wednesday, or Out There is on every Wednesday from 4 to 5, WXOJ LP 103.3 FM here in Florence. So I'm curious to ask you, Jose, like, it feels like a very bold thing to do, to like stand there by yourself with this sign, getting honked at or supported or not supported or yelled at. Like, how do you get to that place? How have you gotten to that place where, like, you know, you can take it?
Well, you know, at first when I started, it was when I first learned about microplastics, and I felt obligated. Like, I had, people should know this stuff, like that we're breathing in microplastics. It's in our food, it's in our water. And, after a little while, like I was getting angry. I was getting upset, and I took it in the wrong direction. I was like letting out my anger to the world of all the problems that were going on. And then another evolution came through, and I'm like, look, I really got to like focus my energy on being more loving. And there were certain mantras that I said in my mind to prepare me to take the abuse from people and to not like respond negatively with any negative emotion. Like I still have strong passion when people like, you know, curse me out or say something negative to me in the streets, because I know that what I'm representing is something that's real, something that's very real and that's really going on in the world. And it's very upsetting to run into people that are in denial. But I chant that people are my family, and I say it over and over and over again. People are my family. People are my family. And it does help me to sort of, okay, this is my brother. He's upset. Maybe he's yelling at me because he knows he's guilty, and he's taking it like an attack, and so he's trying to fight back at me, and family fights. But yeah, like we do our best to teach each other and to point important things out to each other that matter, because we love each other. And I'm trying to focus more on love being the primary motivation of why I'm doing it. I'm doing it because I care about these animals. I care about the people that are suffering around the world. I care about us working hard as much as we can to do the right things to change the world from, you know, sort of creating this hell on earth where animals are dying with their stomachs full of plastic to a paradise that I know is possible, like that. And to work and to fight for that paradise.
Cool. Well, on that note, we'll have a little song break with some Ziggy Marley.
Yeah. Love is my religion. Love is my religion. I'll take you to the temple tonight. All my days I've been searching. Through the books and Bibles of time,
I'm done searching now. I found out what this life is worth. Yeah. Not in the books did I find, but by searching my mind. I don't condemn, I don't convert. This is the calling, have you heard? Bring all the lovers to the fold. The one is gonna lose their soul. Well, love is my religion.
Love is my religion.
Love is my religion. Love is my religion. So you can take it or leave it. Now do you believe? So don't let nobody stop us. Spirits have to soar. With you I share the gift that we now know. Love, love is my religion. Love is my religion. All we need is love. All we need is love. All we need is love. All we need is love.
All right, you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. I'm live in the studio today with Jose Mediavilla. In addition to love, Jose's also got some petitions he's working on. So one of the petitions is about urging the city of East Hampton to use permaculture practices in public lands. Jose, can you share a little bit about that petition?
Sure. Did you want me to just read it or just talk about it? I could the way I drafted the petition is just problem action, and the problem is just sort of verifying, look, climate change is real. 99% of the scientific community agrees, and that we're already experiencing the effects around the world, and events. The scientists are actually saying that the events are unfolding faster than predicted by the IPCC report from the UN. So a basic thing that we can do is, instead of maintaining lawns and aesthetic landscaping, we can do the landscaping focused on carbon sequestration and food security. It's like a two-in-one combo that... also benefits wildlife, because you'll be planting plants that can also sustain different wildlife like endangered bees. And you do it by using native edible perennial plants and trees in a foresting system that's long-lived, requires less maintenance, and then the lawn care and aesthetic focused landscaping, because it doesn't require the same amount of water care or going out on a regular basis mowing or anything like that.
So this is a petition to that you're bringing before the East Hampton City Council to tell me a little bit more about that process and how that works.
I'm learning all about it. I actually this is the first petition that I've ever drafted. I've gotten 50 signatures so far. I was told that I only need 100 signatures. But I'm going to do more than that, because I saw in the Advocate of Northampton that there was this lady was doing a petition to ban plastic straws. And she was required only about 100 as well, but that she was going to go for 1,000 just to say, like, this is how much interest we have in it. So I feel this similar calling and challenge to get as many signatures as I can as possible before submitting it to the municipal building. And I'm going to learn the process as far as I know right now is just get the signatures and then turn it in so that it can get on the agenda.
Okay. So if you get 100 signatures on this petition, they're required to put it on their meeting agenda, the city council meeting.
As far as I understand. Okay. Yeah.
Cool. And so when did you start collecting signatures?
I started yesterday, and so one day and 50 signatures already.
Wow. How did you get them?
I just walked around with a sign that says grow food forest, not lawns. And I had my clipboard and just asked people, hey, do you live in East Hampton? And would you like to sign my petition? And yes, a lot of people signed. I was very pleased.
What kind of different reactions did you get?
Well, some people were like, get away from me. Like, just, you know, I'm going to call the cops if you,
usual. Laugh, but it's not funny. It's very sad.
You got to have to laugh about things at some point just to maintain sanity.
So some people didn't want to talk to you, strongly did not want to talk to you, strongly, and then other people. Yeah.
But I have a calling to disturb deniers. I listen to Extinction Rebellion a lot. And they seem to favor, like, you know, being nice doesn't work. That if you want to stick into someone's memory, something like just speak the truth and be blunt about it. And so when deniers come across, I start spitting as many facts as I can. And if they are trying to, like, if they're trying to, like, cancel me out, sometimes I raise my voice really loud and say the facts, and then now everyone's hearing facts come out of my mouth, like, from even across the street. But at times I do feel desperate. Like this is a very desperate situation. Like, I feel the urgency so much, and I don't know how to give people that urgency besides, like, you know, trying to make a scene so that they won't forget about it, and to share as many facts as I can about the subject.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so like standing on the street corner and yelling, or yelling in general, you know, it's not considered polite.
No.
In New England and in our little culture here, how do you deal with that? How do you think about that?
It's about the fact that it's not polite.
Or, like, you know, how do you, like, do you worry that you're turning people off more than you're educating, or that it's going to backfire?
Sometimes I do, but, like, there was this one person that told me, he signed my petition, and he was like, you know, I think you yelled at me back in the day, like, about cigarettes, and and my cigarettes were filterless. And I'm like, because I guess I assumed that his the cigarette that he was flicking into the ground was a filter that was made of petroleum, but it wasn't. And but majority of them are. So it was safe to assume that it was a problem, but I don't like even seeing it on the ground anyways. I feel like littering is a bad habit. Like, even though it's made out of something biodegradable, doesn't mean that it's not going to harm an animal. Uh-huh. A lot of things, like, that are compostable need to go into a compost heap to break down properly and not be of harm to wildlife. So I still feel validated in having yelled at him, but I did apologize, and I was like, you know, yes, I'm working on that, and I'm telling him I'm trying to come with more love. But, like, yeah, I do get overwhelmed from time to time with passion, and I just let my mouth loose. I feel like it's the least thing that I can do in the situation. And it is nonviolent. And I have gotten a lot of police calls, like people calling the police on me because of it. But I've never gotten arrested because they're very aware that I'm simply exercising my freedom of speech. And I have to stand up for it. They do threaten arrest a bunch of times. And I have to just remind them about their oath. I have to remind them that they're instituted to protect our rights to the freedom of speech. And, you know, if you're limiting my speech, you're telling me that I can't speak at a certain volume. You're saying that, like, people can drive with their cars with hip-hop music, blasting out all kinds of curse words and profane things. And I can't speak facts to people in a loud voice is kind of, you know, I just point these things out, and they always let me go off with a warning.
Or, like, people can drive loud motorcycles. They can run weed whackers. Like, there are a lot of loud things, and, like, what's acceptable. It's just crazy what's acceptable and what's not.
Yeah.
Like, the pollution coming out of your mouth is, like, nothing compared to a weed whacker.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I didn't think about that comparison. Like, yeah, well, like, motorcycles are really loud, and I have brought up that, but, like, I do get, like, disturbed, like, with the amount of weed whacking and lawnmowers and, like, how often it happens. That I have a neighbor that he cuts his grass, like, maybe two or three times a week. Like, he doesn't even want it to grow a centimeter or something. Like, he just goes out there and starts mowing. And it is disturbing to me. It's like... It's like that's the war against nature happening every day, when it could be different, and it could be a system set up to sequester carbon, feed the bees, feed us, nourish us. We could create paradise by converting our lawns. Yeah. And there, I've heard stories of neighborhoods that have done it on small scale, where one neighborhood would start growing food in their front yard and start conversating with their neighbors, and the next thing you know, it's a trend, and other neighbors are growing food and they're sharing food, and it's just it's a very communal connective thing that some communities are doing in the United States. So it's very beautiful, I think.
Yeah, I really appreciate when people, businesses, or people, I guess businesses are people underneath it all.
Yeah.
When people let some things grow, like a little bit of a different aesthetic. Like, for example, I was noticing today when I was doing downtown trash and I was riding down King Street that I think is it like Pam's Kick and Cuts? Maybe they're on King Street, where it's got some recently traditional red bark mulch around some green bushes, and then shooting up through all that, there's a whole bunch of sunflowers. And awesome. Also, like, my dentist's office on Nonotuck Street, it's similar. They got the green trimmed bushes and the wood chip, the bark mulch, and then they have all these milkweed that they've let grow shooting up through
it. Oh, awesome. Yeah. I wish that my neighbors let the milkweed grow. I've seen a lot get cut down. Like, it's there was a lady that was weeding the traffic island that I'm on. And I was like, oh no, she's weeding. And I go there with my sign to hold it, and she was weeding, and she made this comment. I forget what she said, but I'm like, you know, I like the weeds. And she was like, I know you do. And but we gotta sort of, like, have some sort of control, she was saying, and to not let things get too crazy, she was saying. And I was like, well, I thought I'd mention, well, sometimes when the pavement gets too hot, the feet sort of saves me from the weeds sort of save me from the hot pavement. And I guess that struck at her, and she was and she stopped after that. She was like, she cared about my feet more than the weeds. So
I'm talking with Jose Media Villa, from East Hampton, who's been seen around town holding signs for urging people to care and act about the environment. And I'm Ruthie Woodring, and you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio until 5 o'clock. Democracy Now! Comes up at 5 o'clock. So, Jose, I want to ask you about, you mentioned your feet. So you walked over here from my house today, barefoot. How did you, you know, how has that transition been to starting to go barefoot?
Sure.
When did you start and how?
Yeah, it started like I was holding the signs and about microplastics, and there were people that would make comments to me, say, "Hey, your shoes are made of petroleum," and I was like, "You're right, and I should take them off," and so I did, and I already knew about the benefits of earthing. There's this scientific research about being barefoot, and they call it earthing. And so the earth gives off an energy, and our bodies are electromagnetic, where we have a lot of energy in our bodies. And so when we are barefoot, we can connect with the energy of the earth walking around. So I figured, hey, it'd be beneficial for me to do it anyways. And when I was in the Marine Corps, I was in Cambodia, and I remember seeing a bunch of little kids running around in gravel, playing games. So like their bare feet could handle the gravel, and so if their feet could be tough and handle that, then maybe I could train my feet to be tough and handle the pavement. And you know, the first couple weeks was pretty tough. Like it hurt.
You didn't transition. You just took off your shoes and went barefoot from then on out.
I went cold turkey, and the first couple of weeks was painful, but then like slowly, you know, after the first month, I started to notice like, hey, you know, like I kind of saw it like as a penance in a way, like for you know, I guess my guilt for participating with so much destruction and being aware of it for a while and being negligent. And it took me a while to make the sacrifices that I make today, and still even more sacrifices that I think of doing even around the house, to have a better impact. And, but this one has been beneficial to me. Like, I feel like I am getting some of the benefits. Like, it's supposed to be beneficial for your thyroid. It's supposed to help you sleep better, is what scientists are saying about earthing. And the list kind of goes on. Like, it's too much for me to remember everything. You just kind of have to maybe do a Google search. But I even on hot days where it was super hot and everyone was like wanting to give me water, like, And they see me with my bare feet on the hot pavement, and like I didn't notice it as much. I felt all right, you know, and I felt like maybe the energy was helping me adapt to temperatures and stuff like that. Like, I don't know, but I became very addicted to it. And the only place where they don't let me be barefoot is inside the stores. They say my feet are a health hazard. So thankfully, like, there's Miss Irene Gargian, is a local of East Hampton, that heard about, you know, being dedicated to being barefoot, and she bought me some natural rubber flip-flops to wear. And now those are my go-to to wear in the stores, but I still am addicted to just walking around barefoot.
That's cool. So that's the thing for the summer. What do you think you'll do when the winter comes?
I don't know. I really don't want to put on my petroleum shoes back on. I may have no choice but to do that. But like, I'm hoping that like I could find that, an affordable solution. So far, the different alternative shoes that I'm finding are quite expensive. Like, but I'm only looking on Amazon. So they, I saw one completely biodegradable natural sneaker that was worth $250 a pair. So that's quite unreasonable for me.
Yeah, but there's got to be some like leather, wool, moccasin kinds of things. Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking of a friend of mine right now that like his shoes, like, he made himself, and they're just layers and layers of wool, but they look very weird, but they're effective for him. So I might conversate with him and see if I could get myself a pair made before the winter.
How do you feel about using some like dumpster material for the soles, you know, tire tread or something like that?
I think my main idea for having to take them off is just the thought of the petroleum, the tread wearing out.
So
it's like it's gonna go into the environment either way. So that's why I kind of want to stay away from it as much as possible. Of course, if all fails, I'm definitely gonna put on my sneakers and my wool socks.
Yeah.
I'm praying that I don't have to and I can find a solution. Yeah. I think a lot of these sacrifices and movement towards doing better things like also requires a bit of faith and a bit of just like dedication towards finding the alternatives.
Yeah.
And so I do feel a calling to do that. Yeah, I haven't found it yet, but I have hope.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, I have seen a guy around who bikes around Northampton in bare feet, even in the winter sometimes.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just really amazing what the human body can adapt
to.
Oh,
yeah. I should mention, I've studied this guy named Wim Hof, and he walks barefoot in the snow. Even in the Himalayan mountain, he did that barefoot and with nothing but shorts on. He teaches a breathing technique, a breathing technique, and apparently it's about like practicing cold exposure and these breathing techniques combined can help you to warm up your body all on your own and you can withstand cold temperatures.
Wow.
And he's been studied by universities and all of what he does is very legit and world records and stuff. So it's Wim Hof is definitely a good guy to research. And I'm a little frightened about cold exposure.
Yeah,
I've practiced the breathing, and the breathing is quite like you're oxygenating your body is what you're doing with the breathing techniques, and you could feel it like your fingers get tingly. He says that when you practice it, you have to sort of be lying down because you could pass out like from all the extra energy you're giving yourself from the breathing exercise. It's a very powerful breathing exercise.
Yeah, in terms of what human beings can adapt to, I'm just remembering Fiona. I don't know her last name, but she's from Germany. She recently, within the last few weeks, won this transcontinental bike race across Europe. She went like 2,500 miles in 10 days, something like that.
Wow.
And like, so that's like 250 miles a day across over the mountains. And I'm just like, how is that even possible? How is that even possible? And the most impressive, one of the most impressive things about it too was that she just seemed cheery the whole time, according to the pictures I saw. And she stopped and played a little piano concert at one of the check-in points.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, when I think about her doing that, or when I'm out biking and I feel tired, I'm like, remember Fiona.
Right on.
And when I think about how like she could train her body to do that, and the other cyclists too who were in that race, it's like, surely human beings can train themselves to bike to work or to school a little bit.
I think that we're capable of miracles for sure.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to play a little clip that I have here. This is a interview with Catherine Shields, who I ran into downtown when I was doing downtown trash. What's today? Wednesday? This is from yesterday, August 8th, 2019. So I'm doing downtown trash this morning, and I'm here. I ran into my friend Catherine. Actually, Catherine, could you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name's Catherine. I live in Northampton. I've been here about 12 years, and I know Ruthie just because, you know, we're on the street, and that's that, and I just happened to be going into my car as she pulled up, doing the Main Street trash, and I wanted to show her, I've got a big Stop and Shop insulated square bag, one of those big cubes, and in it, I must have, I don't know, 30 plastic cups from Dunkin' Donuts, from Dobra, from Starbucks, and that's my route. because I got sort of addicted to Frappuccinos this summer.
So anyone who's listened to my show will know how much I am sick and tired of plastic cups. So, like, why is Catherine showing me these plastic cups?
And, Ruthie, I forgot to tell you Dunkin' Donuts, because that's the early run. They're open at 4 a.m.
4?
No. Yeah. Yes.
Here? Downtown? Or?
Yeah. 4 on...
Or on King Street.
On King Street, and also 4 on the new place.
All right, they're not even downtown, are they? Just the cups are downtown.
The cups are downtown. And the cups are here. A whole host of them. We got a herd of cups here. So what happens is we got a herd of lids, and we got a herd of straws. And every time I end up at a counter, I go, and I see whether I have taken with me one of my cups, my lids, and my straw. Or do I go back to the car?
Uh-huh.
It's always a moment in time. Do I go back to the car? And the answer is, well, today I did.
Uh-huh.
It was a Frappuccino kind of morning.
Uh-huh.
Here we are in front of Starbucks across the street. And I was going into my insulated bag to get a cup.
So you just reuse them.
I just reuse them.
That's great. Yeah, it's really great that it's like we don't need to buy another special sold as reusable cup to reuse a cup.
Well, I don't know. They're awfully pretty. You should see the display at Stop and Shop. I mean, the Dunkin' Donut, amazing. Uh-huh. Amazing. Very sexy cups.
Cool. Well.
But I don't think I need it.
Cool. Great. Thanks. Anything else?
What do I have to add? I think that's it.
Wait, so when you bring your cup to the counter, they're fine with refilling it?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Yeah. I have a... Oh, I forgot the roasters people, Shelburne and...
Shelburne Falls.
Yeah. I have a very nice cobalt blue plastic mug from them I bought last year.
Uh-huh.
And I've been bringing it to Starbucks a lot this summer. And one of the baristas, my buddy, put a sign on it saying Starbucks. It's beautiful. It's calligraphy. You know, it's really nice looking. So I take that everywhere if I remember it. But usually I always have my generic cups with me now because it's a big wonking bag.
Yeah. And they're light, too. These trash cups, reusable cups, they're super light. You can carry 30
light.
In one bag and hardly even know.
I toss them in the back seat.
All right. Cool. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks, Catherine, for those cup reduction suggestions. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. I've been talking today live in the studio with my friend Jose Mediavilla. And we're going to come back to a little more conversation with that before the end of the hour. Democracy Now! Comes up at 5 o'clock. This is called A Surprisingly Pleasant Song About Plastic Pollution, which I haven't actually heard before. I hope it's pleasant. Or maybe not. It's okay if it's not pleasant. We're talking about not being pleasant today.
Plastic. I love plastic. As a packaging, it truly is the best. Stuff like paper gets so sorted, whereas plastic stands up to the water test. Plastic. Use it once and then just throw it out, my dear. Where it goes is not my problem. There's lots of room for stuff upon a lovely stair.
Plastic in 1950. Quite a lot of plastic was produced that year.
But not as much as the 2000s. We've really moved into the high again. Plastic, if you wonder just where all the plastic is that isn't here, just stroll down to your local ocean and hop over the end of any pier. Plastic, it's in the water. Some floats about, some sinks beneath the swell. All the big bits become small bits that get gulped by crabs, fish, shrimps, and whales. Plastic, lots of plastic. There's such a lot of plastic in our sea. Like a big soup of plastic sea glue. I think I'll eat this yummy fish for tea.
Plastic, without plastic, all the microplastic toxins on the way.
and so plastic that I feel sick. And I've made of plastic stamped upon my rear.
Plastic, so much plastic. Bottles, cotton, birch, bags, puffs, and nylon rope.
From the Pacific to the Arctic. Though I love it, I don't think the sea can cope. Plastic, it's in my house. It's in yours and his and hers and ours and theirs. Plastic, it's our plastic. The problem is that no one I know cares. Plastic, 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 plastic.
Well, I know someone who cares, and that's Jose. And me too.
Right on.
What did I have? I had something else on the tip of my tongue, but it just rolled right off without any making it into words. You're listening to Out There on Valley Fee Radio. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up at 5 o'clock. Oh, I wanted to mention my housemate Shane was saying how these researchers at the Rocky Mountains were studying rainwater, raindrops, and they found like microplastics falling out of the sky in the rainwater.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. What else? All right. Since Catherine was talking about cups, my other little cup story from this morning is that when I was doing downtown trash and I was emptying some cans and bottles recycling, I was trying to empty it into the recycling rollaway behind Broadside Books, behind the Green Bean, but the rollaway was gone. In fact, the rollaway was actually just being returned by the truck driver from USA Recycling. And so the truck driver, you know, backed up, unloaded the rollaway, and then the driver got out and, you know, made sure everything was unchained and ready to go for the first user. And then he opened up the door and he threw in the plastic cup half full of Frappuccino or latte or something that he had been drinking. And I was like, I wonder if I should say something. And so I was like, hey, they didn't tell you that plastic cups aren't recyclable? And he was like, huh? No. And I was like, huh. Well, where did you take the stuff? And he said, oh, well, we go up to Hatfield to the old Dussault place. And I said, well, where does it go from there? And then he said, well, it goes to New something, Connecticut, New Britain, New Bedford, I don't know, somewhere. I don't know about where it goes from there, but anyway, I thought that was curious to see the another waste hauler who does the same thing I do, just throwing his cup half full of slop in the recycling roll away. Jose said the hour's getting to a close. Anything else on your mind you want to share?
Yeah, a few things came to mind. I'm collecting plastics because I'm aware that there's certain mushroom mycelium that can break down plastics. There's also wax worms that can eat plastic. Mm. And there's certain bacterias. Some of this stuff seems like you need a laboratory or something like that, but some mushrooms you can just grow in your basement. So I'm trying to investigate whether I can actually break down like the plastics, because I like what you were saying, like, where does this stuff go? Like, it doesn't seem like we can trust even like garbage disposal. Like, if it goes into a landfill, landfills cause all kinds of problems, like leachate poisoning groundwater and even poisoning certain lakes and rivers that are near landfills. So then you have this opportunity that we can break it down into something that's non-toxic with the mushroom mycelium. And there's different strands all around the world that have been found, like one in Afghanistan, one from the Amazon, and pearl oysters, have been trained to eat cigarette butts in certain cases. So, wow. I definitely want to give it a try. Yeah, I felt that's what sparked in my mind.
Oh, cool. Well, I really want to thank you for your work. And if people are trying to find you, is there a place that you normally are with your sign? Or?
At the intersection of Main Street of in East Hampton is like where I do hold my sign the most, because that's where it has the most traffic. But I'm on Facebook, Jose Mediavilla. Not too many Jose Mediavillas out there.
All right. Well, we're out of time. So thanks a lot. Thank you so much for coming in today. And thank you for what you're doing for the environment and education and all that.
Oh, thanks to you. Appreciate it.
You're listening to This Was Out There on Valley Free Radio. WXOJ LP, Northampton.